Welcome back, America. It is Bill Martinez, 20 minutes after the top of the hour. With us right now is Bruce Thatcher. He's the founder of History Speaks Today, a project dedicated to sharing great lessons learned from accomplishments and failures of those in our past to help us avoid making the same mistakes again and again. That makes too much sense, Bruce, you know, that you would do that sort of thing.
Good morning, Bill. I think it does make too much sense. It's certainly good to be here with you, especially as we're expecting the president to also talk about immigration later on this morning.
Well, it scared me when he made the announcement that he was going to talk about immigration, and this was on the heels of, you know, the debate about the debt ceiling and the government shutdown and all that was going on. I mean, it is clear how this president wants to administrate.
Well, I think that is clear, and I think the timing on this address on immigration certainly suggests something about motive. You could be very much forgiven for thinking that its the main motive is to deflect attention away from the health care debacle right now, and that lends, that goes on to say that it's not likely to be a successful initiative on immigration.
Well, what you talk about in your book on immigration, which, you know, I have said, I've been bragging about your book everywhere. In fact, I was interviewed on a national show here a couple of days ago, and I was bragging on your book, and I, you know, said it's the definitive book on immigration. I mean, all the research that you put into it, it is one, I believe it's the book that every, you know, politician should have in his hands and read. But it's almost like the wrong gospel, wrong church, Bruce, because, you know, just like your, you know, History Speaks Today, you're just too reasonable, and it makes sense. And in D.C. vernacular, it's about reelection.
I'm afraid that's right, and it's very frustrating because, as you said, I've worked really hard on that book to make it an even-handed look at policy success and failure stories and come up with lessons as to what constitutes good policy and suggest a route or pathway to that. I've actually sent that book to a number of congressmen and senators, and I've gotten, I won't say no response whatsoever, but very little response on it. I'm afraid that most of them are so obsessed with the inside the beltway, the we got to be attending to our election next year kind of mentality. They just can't step back and look at the big picture and say, okay, here's what we need to do for the country.
Right. Well, you know, they can't even read Obamacare, which is 2,700 pages. This is maybe a fourth of that, maybe a fifth of it at 463 pages.
That's right,
And even then you say, hey, forget about reading it. Let me just give you a couple chapters just to read because you bring out the idea. And this is what I think more and more Americans are beginning to realize. You know, the dynamic tension that operates between policy and politics. Right now, I mean, politics is winning over policy, it seems, at every turn. And people need to understand that when we go by way of politics versus policy, the United States of America becomes greatly fragmented.
I think that's right. We certainly have had politics versus policy questions have been a part of our heritage in this country since we began. And when you read history, you say, well, this is no different than it used to be. But in a way, I think it is different than it used to be, because now the two sides, and it's mostly two sides in this country now, just simply refuse to even face each other and discuss where we should be.
Well, it's a power play that's already established, Bruce. I mean, you know, Democrats have the White House, they've got the Senate, they don't need to negotiate. And they can just, you know, just sit there with their arms crossed and refuse until, you know, it finally gets bad enough, like it is here with Obamacare, where, you know, it's interesting that the Democrats are now willing to do what the Republicans said that we should do and was the impetus, you know, to shut down the government. And so it's, I find it rather ironic, don't you, that, you know, here we do. Because I guess at some point you got to come back and deal with the truth, right?
Ultimately, the truth confronts you. Mm. We don't always recognize it, but it confronts you. And I think that the administration is doing exactly as you say. They are now suggesting and probably will put in the delay that the Republicans were demanding, but they will not ever, ever admit in any way, shape, or form that it is anything similar to what the Republicans were asking for. It's all about power and I suspect some agenda things about changing the very nature of this country, in my opinion, for the worse.
Well, no question. I believe that that's been, you know, very evident, Bruce, that and I think people, you know, slowly but surely are beginning to see this. 4.5 going 5 years with the Obama administration. He said, look, at this has changed. You know, we are going to fundamentally transform America. Wow. I mean, fundamentally? I mean, fundamentally, we've got the U.S. Constitution. So all that's going to go out the door? I mean, this is, and basically, this is what's happened. I mean, he said exactly what he was going to do. He's been doing it. And, you know, and America said, hey, look, we're going to give you another 4 years. So it gave him all the, you know, all the power that he needed to have at that point, because he can come back and, as many Democrats have said, look at, you know, the people reelected him. And that's true. And in a democracy, we get the government we deserve. And this is who we've elected. And people are saying now, you know, now in his fifth year, that whoa, we didn't want you to fundamentally transform it this much. But, you know,
well,
that's what's happening.
And even before his reelection, even before his first election, you could talk to people and say, look, he's saying this and this and this, and they say, oh, he doesn't mean those things. He doesn't really mean that. I think we're coming to see that he really does mean a lot of those things.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's what the country wants, that's one thing. But if that's what the country does not want, and I firmly believe it is not what the country wants, then we need to be doing something about it. We need to be digging our heels in and doing everything we can to block those kinds of things that represent the kind of fundamental change that we do not want to our government. Unfortunately, when you take that position, you get attacked very, very vigorously in the media and elsewhere as somehow being against the country.
Right. Well, I think the facts are there. They're clearly empirical, you know, and certainly the evidence that this administration wants to take us down a road that takes us further and further away from our American way of life. And that's what seems to be happening. With us is Bruce Thatcher, who has written, in my opinion, the defining book on immigration, How to Avoid Its Perils and Make It Work. Looking at what we've been doing, Bruce, by way of immigration, we have a perilous policy, and it's not working.
It is not working. And one of the reasons it isn't working is because it is so full of internal conflicts. We have laws that say we want to, or parts of the policy that say we want to control immigration coming into this country, and then we have other laws and practices that say, however, we're not going to do that. It is clear throughout all other countries' experience and our own, up until this current policy, that the way to control immigration is to enforce the laws. We have so many laws that are ostensibly to control immigration, and we so clearly and deliberately don't enforce them. And you think the rest of the world doesn't know that? Of course they do.
Exactly.
We have sanctuary cities. We don't do anything about them. We have our own law enforcement, particularly at the federal level, being instructed to not enforce the laws. Enforcing the laws, whatever they may be, is the first critical step, far more important than building fences on the border. And then we need to clearly define who it is we want. We have such a mishmash with our preferences, a politically correct term that we use instead of quotas, but we have such a hodgepodge of collection that it makes the bill It makes immigration policy incredibly complex. Somebody wants to immigrate here, man, they have to hire lawyers. They have to go through all kinds of hoops. And, yeah, you look at all this mess, and you look at it, and you say, that must be what the writers and the people inside the Beltway really want it to be. Why else would they leave it that way?
Yeah, I don't understand it. I mean, to what end, Bruce?
Well, if it is complex, look at the bills they write. The immigration bill was a 2,000-page bill. I'm sorry, a 1,000-page bill. Health care is a 2,000-page bill. And, of course, when you write bills and you have all that complexity, then you have to depend upon the power structure to help you deal with them. It becomes a gift from Washington and the government to get you through that kind of thing. And I truly believe that there are those who want everything we enjoy in this country to be perceived as a gift from the government. You've got to hire the lawyers who then contribute to the politicians. What other conclusions can you come to other than incredible stupidity? And I don't believe that the people we send to Washington are inherently stupid, not by a long ways.
Well, I think in the complexity, it gives them a lot of latitude. I mean, James Madison, our fourth president of the United States, instrumental in drafting the U.S. Constitution, warned against creating laws so voluminous that they cannot be read or so incoherent they cannot be understood. I mean, this is the tax code all over again, Bruce.
It is. And what happens when we try to reform the tax code, when some people, as a few senators and congressmen have set out to do, to reform the tax code, they get absolutely buried by people who do not want it transformed or reformed in any way. I do think, while I say that the people we send to Washington are clearly, for the most part, not stupid, I also think that clearly, for the most part, they haven't read Madison.
Right, exactly. And this is, a government of, for, and by the elite. It is no longer of the people, and this is the time that America, if ever there was a time that America needed to wake up. I mean, it woke up in the first American Revolution, was willing to put their lives on the line, and, if the American way of life that we enjoyed, Bruce, and we're going to pass on to our kids, is going to, make it through the next generation, it's going to require some courage, I believe.
I think it's going to require courage, and it's going to require work. We have provisions in the Constitution that allow us as citizens to change the Constitution without depending upon the Congress to first vote amendments. Mm-hmm. They're risky. They're risky because you open that door and people can make all kinds of changes. But I'm suggesting that that's the only way you will ever get things like term limits, which is a critical part to reforming Washington, in my opinion. I'm coming more and more to think that it's the only way we'll get things done on complex issues like immigration or tax policy or health care or go down the list of things until citizens are going to have to take charge and take a hand, and they're going to have to realize that when they set out to do this, then they're going to be accused of being all kinds of evil things and fascists and you name it.
Right.
It's going to be tough.
The Census Bureau just recently announced that 49.2% of American households is getting some form of government aid. So when you have that going on, and to your point, which you said earlier, Bruce, that the government continues to position itself as being your daddy and being the answer to all life's problems, and they continue to give we the people stuff away in order to endear themselves to a large enough group of people, they get reelected. And so to take a stand against those things that are, reasonable and that are fair, then you're going to be accused of all kinds of things.
You are, and every time a congressman comes up for re-election, they know that very clearly. They know that for the most part, they're going to have to convince a majority of people in their districts that they're going to, in some way or fashion, bring home the bacon. Mm. And de Tocqueville predicted way back in the early 1800s that this was going to be the downfall of this experiment in democracy. And I think that we're seeing some examples of that or at least some indications of that. It's just very, very troubling. But I think that we should not just sit back and say, well, that's the way it's going to be.
Right. Well, you know, it's not that long ago, Bruce, as you know, that John F. Kennedy said, ask not what this country can do for you, but what you can do for the country. And, of course, that has totally reversed itself in 2013 and under this current administration. It's, yes, ask and keep asking what this government can do for you. And don't worry about anything else. We'll take care of it on the backs of those hardworking Americans. Now, this is not to say, look, if you need help, this is a very generous country. We have always been by nature. But when you get to the point that you're helping people that can help themselves, then something has to give. And we continue to pour in so much money on poverty, so to speak, and you say if money was the problem, then we should have solved poverty a long time ago, I would think.
And we not only haven't solved poverty, but within 20 years of the war on poverty, it was clear from all the numbers that all of the spending on poverty was actually worsening the positions of the people it was supposed to be helping. But that didn't get anybody to say, let's change it, because
right.
Once you get the goodies in. You know, you brought up President Kennedy. He did another interesting thing that we haven't seen since his time, and that is he set an objective that the nation could rally behind. Let's go to the moon.
Yes, exactly.
Very specific thing, and it brought people together. We need a president who will do that.
Yeah, we need a vision, no doubt about it. And interesting you should bring that, Bruce. We got about 45 seconds. Summarize this immigration policy. What can we look for and pray for that and hope for that our president might get regarding immigration?
I think that the thing that we can especially hope for and pray for is that there will be a genuine effort to work together for immigration reform. And that we'll see whether that happens when we see whether the president and the Democrats in the Senate and the Republicans in the House are willing to literally sit down together and work out compromises and definitive corrections to the policy.
Yeah, we can only hope for that. Bruce Thatcher, founder of History Speaks Today and author of the book Immigration, How to Avoid Its Perils and Make It Work. Bruce, is always great to have you along with us.